In today's Chrysalis Conversations, I'm joined by the lovely Hannah Powell. She's here to share her story of being diagnosed with a functional neurological disorder, how that affected her life, and how she used the power of nature to aid her in her journey to recovery. Hi, I'm Nikki Collinson-Phoenix, business owner, serial goal-getter, adventure seeker, chaser of dreams, humanitarian, and believer that anything is possible. In this podcast, I will bring you conversations around transforming your business and life through strategy, mindset, kindness, compassion, freedom, happiness, and contribution from myself and from many others who have walked their own path of transformation and discovery. Because life is short and life is precious. And in the time you have on this earth, I want to give you the tools so that you too can believe anything is possible and for you to achieve your own version of success and happiness, both in your work and your life. So are you ready to shine, transform and live your best life? Then welcome to the Chrysalis Conversations. All right. Hello and welcome to today's episode of the Chrysalis Conversations. I'm absolutely thrilled to have our guest with me today for today's conversation. It's the lovely Hannah Powell, who's coming to us from Essex in the UK. Hey, lovely. How are you?
Hello. I'm really good. Thank you. Although I must admit, I was up for quite a lot last night with my poorly daughter. So if I have a moment where I zone out, just, you know, bring me back.
How old is your daughter?
She's nine. So,
oh, bless. Yeah. I've got a 10-year-old. Have you got a tween in the house? Okay.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, oh my goodness, what the hell?
From the age of two. From the age of two, let's be honest.
I'll tell you something, we were given a little reprieve for the year of six, and that's been it. Six was great, and then it came back with seven.
I would love a reprieve, but no, she's brilliant as well, but yeah, hard work.
But yeah, absolutely. But that's a whole other story. We could do
a whole other story. Absolutely.
Living with a tween and how that manifests in your life and your business. So the lovely Hannah we have here, she is an author of The Cactus Surgeon. So if you need to go and check that out, but we're going to learn a little bit more about how that even evolved as we go through our conversation today. But you know, the purpose of having this podcast is to inspire you guys, those of you that take the time to listen to this podcast. You help make it a top 1% podcast. So our people that are listening, is to inspire you that no matter what is going on in your world, no matter what challenge, hurdle, adversity is going on in your world, for you to be able to see what possibilities can come out of that rather than be held back by limitations that you may put in place. Now, Hannah's got the most incredible story to share of how she had some experiences through her life that made her make some decisions and changes. And I really, really can't wait for Hannah to share that story with you. So Hannah, I'm going to kind of hand over to you. Can you tell our listeners and me, because I know the summary of the story, but I'm really, really interested actually to hear the whole story. Can you tell?
Like, sure. Share it? Yeah. Absolutely. So I'm going to take you back a little bit to my childhood, because it's relevant to the journey. So I grew up living next to a garden centre, which is fairly unusual upbringing. We were very connected to the land, connected to the seasons. We talked about the weather every day. We talked about the wildlife. We learned all the names of the wildflowers. We knew what was growing. It was just a very kind of almost like people did in the old days, you know, when everyone was kind of involved in the farming community. We were very involved in the land in
you
that
were very
sense.
Very connected to the earth.
Very connected without even realising it. That was just normal for us. Yeah. And then I went to university. I went and studied horticulture because I loved plants. And then I ended up in London because I realised that all the horticulture jobs were out in the countryside. All my friends were in London. And, you know, when you're in your 20s, you want to be kind of partying and socialising. And so I went to London and I thought, oh, I'll be here for a couple of years. Maybe I'll find a job that links to horticulture. I did temping jobs for a year, and I ended up in a PR agency, and I worked there for 5 years. And then I went to a not-for-profit organisation and worked there for another 4 or 5 years. And
very different to horticulture.
Very different, very different. But I think because I'd grown up with quite a strong work ethic, and I had I suppose, knowledge of business and running business, I could bring that to it. And I'd always love reading and writing, you know, in English. And of course, in a PR agency, those skills are really important, and confidence and communicating and all those things I kind of brought with me from, not from school necessarily, but from, you know, growing up in a business and, you know, talking to customers and those kind of things. So ended up there, and the culture there was, you know, this we're talking about in the noughties. So we're talking about working really hard, but also playing really hard as well. There was a culture of going out all the time. There was a culture of drinking a lot of alcohol, often without eating anything. You know, it was just
normal. A few of us normal. That are probably listening to that are remembering those days.
Yeah, it was. I mean, at the time, I thought it was wonderful. You know, it was like an extension of student life, an extension of being at university, where I also drank too much. Yeah. I'd regularly work kind of 8 a.m. in the morning to 8 a.m. in the evening, you know, come home, grab a ready meal somewhere on the way home if I wasn't going to the pub. You know, weekends were spent socializing as well. And
you're taking me through my old corporate life right now. You know that you are taking
Exactly. And there was no, you know, people looked out for each other. It was an amazing group of friendships, but there wasn't really a focus on self-care. There wasn't really any talk of mental health or drinking too much or any of that we have now. There was kind of, if something was exactly, if something was clearly wrong with you, someone would step in and say, you know, are you at HR, would kind of come and have a word. Or, you know, if I don't know, I suffered some bereavements and I had some depression, and, you know, they were very supportive of that. But there was no kind of prevention of anything. It was more kind of, you know, reacting when something went wrong. So I was living this amazing life, working for really high profile, you know, clients. For example, we launched the Barclaycard sponsorship of the Premiership. You know, we did parties in Manchester and London with Alex Ferguson and all sorts of things. I worked for Domino's Pizza, ate a lot of pizza. Then when I went to the not-for-profit organisation, we were promoting entrepreneurship around the UK. So we were doing Global Entrepreneurship Week with loads of startup entrepreneurs and schools and colleges. And, you know, I met the entrepreneurs from Dragon's Den, you know, Peter Jones and Deborah Meaden, and we did events with the Prime Minister. You know, it was amazing. I was living this fantastic life. And then it kind of went wrong. I started getting twitches. You know, when you go to sleep and sometimes you kind of twitch yourself awake. Yeah. It started like that, but they got more and more. And then I was getting them in the daytime as well. And then I went to have, I used to have regular physiotherapy because I was, you know, sitting at a desk all the time. I'd also dislocated a shoulder on the dance floor and it popped back in again, but then I didn't treat it. So then it took quite a lot of treatment for that, you know, all these crazy things. And my physio, I remember he was trying to treat me and I kept kind of twitching like this. And he was like, Hannah, this is not right. And he'd known me for quite a few years and he was like, I'm not really very happy about this. So he wrote a letter to my GP. And there began my journey to diagnosis. And it got quite scary. I ended up being off work. At its worst, I would describe it as burnout. I would describe it as my body, kind of my nervous system getting stuck on high. It was like, it, you know, kind of get that fight or flight, and it kind of didn't know how to calm down in between.
Yeah.
So eventually I was diagnosed with something called functional neurological disorder, which is the most common condition that most people have never heard of. You're actually far more likely to be diagnosed with FND if you go to a neurology clinic than you are to be diagnosed with MS or Parkinson's, which everyone has heard of.
I'd never heard
of this. I never met anyone else who had it. There was no Facebook groups back then. You know, there was kind of nothing. And it took quite a long time to be diagnosed. So the diagnosis journey was terrifying. It involved, you know, an MRI scan and an EEG and being in a room surrounded by literally 5 to 10 consultants all kind of scratching their chins and, you know, doing things to me to make me react. So at its worst, sorry, I've gone in a bit of a circle there, but at its worst, sound or touch would make my body react. So what I mean by that was that each time my feet were on the floor, I was twitching, my arms were flailing out, my body, my torso was twitching in reaction, like scared, you know.
Yeah.
Sound would do it. Fireworks night was not much fun.
No.
And even at its worst, picking up a piece of paper. I remember being in a restaurant and picking up a menu and it kind of doing it. I remember being on the tube one day back from work, and I'm doing it on the tube and most people are ignoring me. I'm standing up. You know, one lovely lady gives me a seat, and I just get off the tube and just, you know, in tears and ring my boyfriend, you know, please come and pick me up. So it was really kind of became quite a desperate situation. And I think the uncertainty was one of the worst things, because you know, you Google, you go on there and you look what it could be, and it's terrifying. And they were the consultants were saying things like, oh, we think it's epilepsy, here's some medication, didn't work. We think it's something called propriospinomyoclonus, which is irritation of the spine, give you medication for that, didn't work. And then at the end of this process, they sat me down and said, good news, there's nothing wrong with you. At which point I burst into tears, and he was like, the consultant was like, why are you so upset? I said, look at me. I said, I can't work.
How?
I'm really tired. I can't walk without twitching. But you're telling me there's nothing
wrong
with me.
You're telling me I'm completely fine.
Yeah, exactly. So that was you know, you talk about these kind of transformational moments. That moment was huge for me, because it just, I was like, what is going on? Because this process took too long, I'd already kind of taken it into my own hands to do something about it. I'm not the kind of person to sit back and let life happen to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, partly that's why I burnt out. But actually, in terms of recovery, that was a good thing, because I wasn't going to wait for something to happen. So whilst I was waiting for this diagnosis, which I still hadn't got in the story, I will get there eventually. But while I was waiting for this, I got counselling. So I'd been to a counsellor when I'd had depression and some bereavements previously, and I went back to her. That was really important. I went to my physio, said he couldn't do a lot, but he recommended his colleague who did cranio osteopathy. Something I'd never had before, but that was amazing. He was brilliant because he described to me kind of what was happening with my body, and he looked at it in a holistic sense. He gave me loads of tips. He'd suggested I cut out wheat for a bit. He said, you know, cut down on any chemicals that you're using. You know, I wasn't drinking alcohol by that point anyway, but he was like, don't drink alcohol, don't drink caffeine, you know, just give your body a chance to kind of heal. And he said, if your nervous system was a red raw scab on your skin, it would be so sensitive that you wouldn't be able to touch it. And he said what he was going to try and do was to kind of cover the scab up so that it could kind of cope with things
with
again
going on.
And that was brilliant. And he also said, look, alongside what I'm doing, I would recommend some acupuncture. So I went along to acupuncture. I'd never had any of that before, and that was amazing. It really helped to desensitize the nervous system. And you know, you walk in this amazing treatment room with these beautiful aromatherapy oils, and she put these needles in, and actually she put one in my chest. I remember it so clearly. She put one in my chest and I just started sobbing, and it was like this kind of something was unlocked in me.
There's a real,
just kind of
a real
came
channel
out
there when you put a needle there that just
so that that felt really good. And then the fourth thing that I did was that I got out every day for a walk, and I made myself get out, even if I didn't. There were a few days when I wasn't well enough, but I made myself get out as much as I could. And bearing in mind that walking set it off, that wasn't easy, but I knew that for my mental health I had to get out. I remember when I'd had depression before, my mum would ring me and say, like, oh, I'm fed up, you know, nothing's going on. She'd be like, get out for a walk. And I'd be like, oh, I don't want to. And she'd be like, get out for a walk. So I would. And you know, by the time I got up to the top of the hill and I was looking at the trees and I got to the park, my mental health was improved. So I kind of knew that that worked. So went out every day, and I challenged myself to take one good photo every day. And inevitably, because I love nature, they tended to be natural photos. So those kind of little details that other people kind of rush past in their haste to get somewhere. So water droplets on a leaf, moss in a crack in a wall, you know, spring blossom, ducks
being
making
massively
a nest,
in the moment,
whatever it was. So every day I would take one photo. And honestly, I think that was a huge part of my healing, because when you're in a situation where you're at home, no one else worked at home back then, everyone was at work, you're on your own, you don't know anyone else that's got this thing, it's quite isolating, it's really depressing, and you can get in a bit of a negative spiral in your head. So those nature walks got me out of my head. And they also gave me something to talk about. So, you know, my family were not too far away in Essex, but, you know, they weren't there every day. They were really worried about me. So when I phoned home, I could say, oh my gosh, I heard the first cuckoo, or, you know, whatever it was, would just give us something to talk about. So it kind of got me out of my head. And I honestly think that helped me to heal. So back to the diagnosis journey. I'm sobbing in this consultant's office, and he kind of seemingly as an afterthought said, well, okay, I'll refer you to a neuropsychiatrist. And I was like, fine, you know, take anything. I went along to this neuropsychiatrist, and he said, you've got a dysfunctional neurological disorder. And he was the first person to kind of mention it. And he said, but by that time, I'd, as I say, been doing these four things, and I was much better. And he said, to be honest, he said, I don't think anything we would do here is going to improve you more than what you've already done yourself. He said, so I think I had one checkup, but they essentially discharged me. He gave me a website to look at, and that was kind of it. So I will never know which of those four things helped me here, or my sense is that it was a combination of all of them. And I think also, when you're unwell, you know, the NHS is amazing at kind of diagnosing things. And yes, you've got that, or no, you haven't, but they're not great at kind of health and well-being. No. And actually just going, you know, every week or every fortnight or every month, you know, to different practitioners gave me a support network. And I feel incredibly privileged that I could afford that. You know, I know other people with FND who are, you know, working parents or single parents, or, you know, who haven't got that money. And so I do appreciate that I was in a very lucky position to be able to access that extra care. But I think there is, you know, there are learnings in there. And then eventually I moved back to Essex. I decided that London was just too much for me. I moved out with my fiance. We got married, and we've been here 10 years now, and kind of, I call it my green recovery. It's kind of continued. I'm now back working in the garden centre, and I love it. You know, I drive to work through Woodlands at the moment. The bluebells are out. I get to work. I work mostly at my desk, but, you know, I take breaks by going downstairs and walking through the plants. And I don't think I will ever let myself become disconnected from nature. Again, and I'm not saying that disconnection caused me to be ill, but it definitely has helped me to be well again, to be connected with nature.
And so the book then that came out of this, tell me a bit about how the book came about.
Sure. So I've always loved writing. I've written for work for, you know, 20 years. And then during lockdown, I saw this pop-up Facebook book group called Write That Book, with this guy called Michael Heppel, who I'd seen talk at a conference a few years previously. He's an amazing speaker, one of the best speakers I've ever seen. And he's written several books, including Flip It, How to Be Brilliant, all these kind of things. He does lots of motivational coaching. He's coached Davina McCall and Sarah Cox, and, you know, got a really good track record. And he had this free pop-up group, and I thought, well, I've got nothing to lose. And I thought I may be writing a book about growing up a garden centre, because that's quite unusual. But actually, as the process developed, I realised that it was my nature and health journey that became kind of, I became quite obsessed by telling that story. And I realised that actually at that point, so I'd, by the way, I'd put FND kind of in a cupboard. I hadn't really thought about it for 10 years. Obviously, on a daily basis, I look after myself in a way that I never did before, so that I don't go back to that place. But I didn't really think about FND as such. So in researching the book, I had a look at what resources are out there for people with FND these days, what kind of treatment they get these days. I joined Facebook groups that, you know, again, weren't around when I was.
Are there actually more around now?
There are loads of Facebook groups, loads of people active on Twitter. There's an amazing charity that was set up just after I was ill, actually, a couple of years later, called FND Hope UK, which are amazing. Mm. And actually, the sad thing for me is that it hasn't really moved on as much as I would have hoped. There are still not that many books out there about it. I think I found one self-published book and one other book. It's a bit of a postcode lottery out there. So there's some neurology departments that are giving people amazing care. Others, frankly, aren't. And also a lot of people, so I should say that FND, I actually realised now that I had quite a mild version. I was quite lucky, even though it was horrific for me at the time. Other people are much more ill, have symptoms including paralysis, blindness, seizures, All sorts of horrible things, because in a way all that's happening is that your brain's sending the wrong signal to a part of your body. So in a sense it could affect any part of your body, you know, problems swallowing, all sorts of, you know, fatigue, etc. And it can mirror other conditions as well. There are tests now that will positively diagnose it rather than ruling other stuff out, which is where they were when I was there. But there are still a lot of people that are not getting diagnosed, not getting treatment, you know, have nowhere to go. So I just kind of quite quickly realized that actually there was my story could help people, you know, because I was able to recover. And actually I've learned quite a few things. So I've learned that the quicker you get diagnosed and do something about your treatment, the more likely you are to recover. The longer that you sit, that you live with those symptoms, your body almost kind of, they become normal to your body. It's quite hard to then, you know, change them. And awareness is still really low, you know, considering how common it is that still most people I meet have never heard of it. So as I say, it became quite obsessive to kind of get this down on paper. And it became the cactus surgeon, because that's one of the things I fleetingly wanted to be when I was about 6 years old. I used to gouge rotten bits out of my cactuses and, you know, try and reattach limbs with cocktail sticks.
That is a really like cool thing to have. I'd say you wanted to be when you were a kid.
Exactly. And it's kind of different. So
yeah, absolutely. Now, with what you learned from that now, where do you think back in that lifestyle that you were leading? What do you think were the triggers that led you to have this?
Oh gosh. I mean, that's kind of what the book does, is kind of, you know, start with the being ill and look back. I think you know, the fact that I had such a strong work ethic and had no off switch. Yeah. So working, I would just work. There was no boundaries. Drinking, I would just drink. So I didn't drink at home. And luckily, I never became an alcoholic. I think
it was everything you did, but was to excess.
I did to excess. So thank God I never took drugs. Otherwise, I probably would have done that. But, you know, I was always the last one there at the end of the night. I didn't think to myself, I've had too much. I just kept pouring it down my neck. So I think, that was part of it. You know, I look back and think, well, why me? Why not other people? And I think there was a lot of kind of resentment. Why did I get ill when other people didn't? You know, my dad used to work 7 days a week when we were younger, and he's, you know, barely been ill in his life. You know, that's not fair. But it's just one of those things. And actually, the quicker you can accept that it did happen to me, and it doesn't really matter why, it's interesting to reflect on, but you are where you are. You've got to move on in you know, to recover.
But what's really great, though, as far as kind of like the ethos of this podcast as well, is the fact that you were dealt this hand, whether you know, you had an element of control over it, or whether there was, you know, some of the stuff that you did triggered it, or whether it was coincidental or whatever it was, these were the cards that you were dealt. And what's really great, though, is that you then decided to use it as a force of good. Is you then said, you know, how can I use this in a way that can impact and help other people? And I think that's one of the things, and I'm sure you must have met people. I mean, my background as a therapist for, you know, 20 years means plus, you know, 20 plus years means that over those years, I saw so many people who were navigating different challenges in their life, but the way that they chose to navigate it varied completely. You know, somebody with quite a what you would deem as a small hurdle, or a less invasive adversity, literally making the choice to give up entirely on life.
Yep.
And then people who were practically, how are you even alive? Living for the day. Do you know what I mean?
And definitely.
And then everyone in between. And I think, you know, you must, through the people that you're now connected to, must also see people managing this condition in different ways, and how powerful when you talked about the nature element and you finding your thing that helps you, of how in all of this stuff, what goes on up in the head has such a massive impact on how it affects
absolutely And in a way, because there wasn't much information out there when I was around, I didn't know how bad FND could be.
Yeah.
So in a sense, I wasn't defined by it. And you see it, don't you, with all sorts of illnesses, all that sorts. Someone gets a diagnosis and they almost fit the kind of...
Fit it. I've got my label.
They start walking differently or you know,
everything.
Things get accentuated. So I didn't have that. So in a way, I look back and think, well, I was quite lucky, even though I wish I'd had known some other people. I was lucky in a sense that I also it took me such a long time to get the diagnosis that I just kind of thought, well, I'm going to fix myself.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
Regardless. But absolutely, mindset is huge. And I think because I'd had a period previously where I'd had depression and I'd got through that, I kind of had a sense that I felt more resilient maybe than other people. Yeah. I had a supportive partner, I had a supportive family, I didn't have to worry about finances, you know. I just moved into my boyfriend's flat, which I think is quite interesting in itself, that I'd moved in and then within a few months got quite ill. It was almost like I kind of relaxed and then my body was like, oh, we want you to do more of that. Let's slow down completely, you know. I didn't have any, you know, dependents to worry about. You know, gosh, if you get this as a parent, I think that must be incredibly hard. You know, I was able to be completely selfish and put myself first.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a lot of people who get this, you know, they can't do that because they've got caring responsibilities, you know,
worries. I do believe that, you know, when it comes to things like this and a lot of different situations, not necessarily health ones, but just circumstances, there are things that happen in your life that you have no control over, an aspect of it. But what you do have control over is how you manage it, how you deal with it. You know, do you choose to come at it from a place of negativity or do you choose to say, well, how can I look at this in a positive light? And that, you know, and for some people that's easier said than done, without a doubt. But if you can, you're like, when I'm thinking about people that are listening to this right now, if you're sitting there right now in a place feeling like life is controlling you, actually realizing that if you can shift your mindset a bit more, you can take an awful lot more control back on your destiny than you actually think you can.
And people often say to me, you know, what can I do to help someone who's got FND? And I say, you know, they have to be wanting to make a change. They have to be willing to put the effort in. But when they are willing to do that, you need to be there to help them. So be the one that does the research on the internet, be the one that finds the alternative practitioner or the FND specialist in their area, whatever it is you decide, whatever route you go down, that's really helpful. But you can't kind of force it upon them before they're ready. They have to come to it in their own time. But I've always been a facilitator. You know, if someone tells me a problem, my mind's going into how can I fix it, and actually I've had to kind of realize that actually it's not always my job to fix it.
And that shouldn't be, you know, I'm very similar to that, to the point of being an enabler. I've had to rein back.
It's really easy to do, isn't it,
because you've come from a good place.
But I suppose that helps, you know. Definitely. But it does help me in that, you know, if I get any health problems now, immediately I'm like, right, how am I going to be proactive about this? What am I going to do about it?
Yeah. Now, listen, obviously over on that journey, you learn an awful lot of things. And one of the things that we love to do on the show is be able to kind of share some tips and learnings that you can share with people that are listening. So if you had some tips and lessons that you kind of think, listen guys, I really want to share these learnings with you, what three tips would you share with our guys?
So I think number one, if you're going through something difficult or a health journey like I did, is find something to take you out of that place. So for me, it was nature. Some people find it through drawing or music or reading or whatever it is, whatever works for you. But I know that some people I've spoken to have said, I've talked to them and, you know, maybe they're not able to leave the house. I'm like, well, what about a house plant? What about something really simple that you have to care for every day? You have to nurture, and it will change and it will grow, and it just gives you something to focus on that's not the negative thing in your life. So that finding something to focus on, I think, is really important. And by the way, there is so much science that backs this up. It's not just me saying it. There's all kinds of studies that show that in hospitals, people heal quicker if they're around nature. People with ADHD, you know, if you take kids into a park before you do some learning with them, you know, that's going to benefit them. Being around timber and natural materials and plants will literally lower your blood pressure and your heart rate. So yeah, there's lots of science out there about why being in nature is good for you. Number two, I think, is if something's happening to you, don't wait for someone else to solve it. You know, think about how you can fix it. And if you're not capable yourself, you know, ask for help. I think a lot of people find this really difficult. But, you know, we're not all equipped to be able to do everything in life. And I think sometimes
stubbornly independent.
Don't be stubborn. Exactly. You know, and say, look, I'm not coping. Can you help me? And I think once you do that, it's amazing what you find. And you know, it's very liberating to say, look, I'm struggling and I need your help. And people want to help. So, you
people
know, let
want
them.
To help.
Yep. Mm. And then the last one, number three, is that I really think you will heal quicker if you accept the situation and have that positive mindset. Now, it took me quite a long time to accept that situation that I was in. I didn't want to be ill. I didn't think it was fair that I was ill and other people, not that I wanted other people to be ill, but, you know,
no,
why is it?
It was
why
a bit
is
of an injustice.
Yes, exactly. And my counsellor, I mean, you know, I've known her for years and I still go back to her, you know, from time to time when I've got struggles. And she says to me, gosh, you were resistant, Hannah. I had to work really hard at that, you know, so that didn't come easy. I'm not saying that that happened overnight, but I do think that the work I did with her to help me accept the situation, and there's still a little bit of me that doesn't, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
But because I broadly accept the situation, I think I'm much more likely not to get it again, not to go back to that place.
They are really, really great tips. And I think you're absolutely true, is that, you know, it doesn't matter what situation life throws at us, that it is what it is, isn't it? Ultimately.
Yeah.
And for us to move past it, navigate it, learn to live with it, whatever, it has to start from a place, if you can, of acceptance that it's here. Otherwise, yeah, you're living a life of denial, aren't you? Which is not
absolutely. And I think wherever, for most people, and obviously there's some people in horrific situations, but for most people there is a thing around perspective as well. You can normally, like I say, I now realise actually I was lucky with FND, and you know, I now realise that that little bout of depression at the time, it felt awful, but actually looking back on it, that prepared me for the FND, you know. So all of these kind of things at the time when you're in it, they feel really bad. Sometimes you can look back on them and think, well, actually something positive, you know, has come out of it. And I always say to people, look, today is awful, but it won't always be, you know, that there is a better day ahead, but I can't tell you when that will be.
It's that phrase, isn't it? This too shall pass.
Yes, absolutely. It's just hard when you're in it to see that.
Massively, and very, very consuming. And that's why really the mindset piece is one of the biggest bits of it. And like you say, if you're struggling with your mindset, again, is to be able to reach out to people that can help you, even just to talk through stuff with you. Really, really great tips. Thanks, Hannah. And how are things, you know, with the health side at the moment? Where are you at right now?
Yeah, really good, actually. I mean, I call myself kind of broadly recovered from FND, but I don't feel like I'm ever gone back to full health, whatever that is, normal health.
Yeah.
So I have to look after myself. I'm back in the family business, so that's brilliant because it allows me to be flexible with my work. I've never gone back to work full time. I also, you know, have my daughter, so my husband works full time, so I'm main carer for her as well. So I do juggle a lot. But I'm back to doing quite a lot with my life. You know, I've written a book, I'm a member of the local gardening club. You know, I do quite a lot. I'm currently experiencing symptoms of perimenopause. That's my next challenge, is kind of
I'm going to start heading into that soon. That's a grim old thing to look forward to, isn't it?
Having a chat with a lot of women at work and in my social circle at the moment about it. The brain fog, is awful. Yeah. When I've got a week of brain fog, it's like my brain is like walking through treacle. Oh, I have to write everything down. I cannot remember anything.
I look at my daughter, I remember like having to do the chat with my tween daughter, you know, about stage one, the whole puberty thing, and then sitting there thinking, Christ, I'm actually about to just impart on her like the clouds of doom. Like she's living this wonderful life. And I'm like, you know, oh, the journey of a woman when you go from, you know, good old periods to pregnancies to stretch marks to all of childbirth and then go straight into the menopause. You're like, yeah, happy days.
and a lot of healthcare, unfortunately, has been dictated by men in the past, and things like menopause. Like, why are we in this situation where there's still women that don't understand it and are not getting the right treatment? It's just crazy to me. But anyway,
so I sit there and I remember sitting there thinking, oh my goodness, I'm about to, like, I've got this little girl who's having this wonderful life, you know, and I'm now about to just go, hey, it's all going to go tits up soon because, look what I've got to tell you, it's just around the corner. I'm totally feeling that one. Hannah, I'm really glad that you're finding a place where you've got your balance and how you can share that now with other people and use your book and everything as a force of good. Thank you so much for sharing your story. While you're here, would you be so kind as to take part in our little get to know you?
Absolutely, yes.
Just for a little bit of fun. Now, the thing is, question number one made me chuckle because you've already answered it.
Go on.
So I'm just going to throw the questions at you. Just give me the first answer that comes into your head. Don't overthink it. Just have a bit of fun with it. All right. So question number one, what do you want to be when you grow up? What did you want to be when you grew up?
A cactus surgeon. or like my mum and dad, probably running a garden centre.
Yeah, I know that one. Aside from your own, do you have a favourite book?
Oh, gosh, that's like asking me my favourite plant. I love so many.
Throw us one of your faves.
Okay, one of my recent faves. So one of my authors in the Write That Book pop-up, I went on to do the paid masterclass. And one of the other authors is a guy called Roger Wilson Crane. And he's got a wonderful book called Certified. And it's a fictional memoir. So it's based on his life, but there's other things thrown in there as well. And that's a really, really good one. Really actually, good his book. Wife, Victoria Wilson Crane, has written a brilliant book about grief as well. So, yeah, either of their books would be brilliant.
Well, they're a talented little bunch, aren't they?
They are.
Very talented. Right, you can only eat one meal for the rest of your life. What is it?
Oh, my goodness. Well, because of my IBS, there's a lot of things I can't eat. So, maybe ham, egg and chips.
Ham, egg and chips. I love a good basic staple there. Right, you can have dinner with somebody. They can be famous, not famous, dead, alive, historical, whatever, fictional. Who do you want to have dinner with?
Oh, goodness. Who do I want to have dinner with? I was going to say David Attenborough. It's really obvious, but come on. I mean, his love of nature. I would love to have a chat with him about some of the things he's done.
He's a pretty awesome guy. Give me one thing that's still on your bucket list that you haven't yet done.
Oh, actually, I'd love to go to Holland to the tulip fields in Keukenhof. That's on my bucket list.
That's going to roll into the next question, which is a country that you would like to go to that you haven't yet visited. But we know Holland's one of them. Have you got another one?
Oh, gosh. Well, where I haven't visited, I'd love to go somewhere like Madagascar or Borneo or somewhere like that with the amazing wildlife.
Nice. I like that. Do you have a favourite movie, or like it's a Sunday afternoon and you're just going to chuck a movie on? What would it be?
I don't really do that many films, but I love like the Harry Potter films and some of the kind of comic films and just silly things, you know, animated films. So, yeah.
Perfect. Now, when you're not working, and we know that you like to walk, do you have any other hobbies and interests that you get involved in that we don't yet know about you?
Oh, I've done a sewing class. I've recently gone back to Tai Chi.
Oh, cool.
And I like drawing and anything creative.
Oh, fab. Now, if you've got to go away for a weekend, you're going to go to a mountain cabin, a beach house or a city penthouse. Which one are you going to?
The mountain cabin, definitely.
The mountain cabin. And if you had a superpower, what would it be?
Oh, gosh. Heal people, I think.
That'd be nice, wouldn't it? That'd be nice. Yeah. And your last one, when you were a kid, did you have a nickname?
Oh, I did. It's a bit embarrassing, actually. I used to be called Hannah Whoops.
Hannah Whoops. But you're going to have to tell us why now.
Well, I just, as a child, I was the one that would fall in the water or trip over or, you know, waste.
So you were always saying whoops.
And it was always, oh, whoops, you know, made the custard too thick. There's, yeah, look, there's a whole chapter dedicated to it in the book, actually. It's about my little misdemeanors.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, there you go. You survived the quick fire. Get to know you, Ram. Thank you for sharing that stuff with us, just for a little bit of a laugh. Now, Hannah, if people that are listening to you want to connect with you, either just to be in your space, maybe someone listening is actually suffering with the same condition as you, or they want to connect with your book, or they just want to be in your, you know, be in your world, what is the best way that they can connect with you away from here?
Sure. So if you Google the cactus surgeon, not unsurprisingly, I am the one that comes up on page one. There's not many of us around.
That is a really cool thing to have, though. Yep. That is the advantage of having a slightly different
name,
isn't it?
Absolutely. But the website is thecactussurgeon.com. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Twitter. So, yeah, I'd love to have a chat. Always happy to chat to other people about what they're going through.
Oh, that's fantastic. And I will put all those links as well on the show notes as well, so that you can click on them. Hannah, thank you so much for your time today and sharing your story and your learnings and your wisdom. I'm so glad that your healing journey, whilst not over, is in a much better place than where it was. And I really, really appreciate you giving up your time today.
Oh, thank you. It's been really uplifting. I love being able to tell my story so that I can hopefully help other people. So yeah, well, that's really upbeat way of doing it. So thank you.
Yeah. And the thing is, again, it's all about using these things as a force of good, isn't it? You know, there may well be at least, you know, even if one person listening to this today makes a different choice or a different decision or whatever as a result of how it impacts their life, whatever's going on, they just think, as a result of listening to this, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. And they make a shift as a result of it, then it has done its job. So I really, really appreciate you doing that.
Thank you.
So guys, thank you so much. Those of you listening, thank you for joining us on today's episode of the Chrysalis Conversations. Connect with Hannah away from here. And I really look forward to catching up with you on the next episode. Have a lovely day wherever you are in the world, and I'll catch up with you soon. Take care now. Bye-bye.